It's clear to me, said Johnny, repressing his shaking anger, that one of the horses can come over and get electrocuted. It's also clear that you could accidentally trip those controls. Animal, we are standing here jabbering and omitting the fact that I have truly befriended you. Johnny was very alert. Turl took out a metal cutter and snipped off Johnny's collar. He then mockingly handed him its remains and the leash. Run around, said Turl. Feel liberty. Frisk. Turl moved off and started picking up some odds and ends of tools he had strewn about while working. The stench of the electrocuted coyote was rank in the air. And what do I pay for this? Said Johnny. Turl came back. Animal, you must have realized by now, in spite of your rat brain, that your best course is to cooperate with me. In what way? That's better, Animal. I like to see gratitude. In what way? Repeated Johnny. The company has some projects that need doing. They are very confidential, of course. And you are standing there pledging your full cooperation, right? Johnny looked at him. And when they are all done, said Turl, why, I will stagger you with gifts, and you can return to the mountains. With them, said Johnny, pointing at Chrissy and Patty. Of course, and with your four-legged companions as well. Johnny knew a false Turl when he saw one. Of course, said Turl, if you try to get away, which I think by now you have found impossible, or if you seek to mess me up, or if you don't succeed, why then, very easy, the little one loses its head. And if you repeat your mistake in any way, the bigger one loses its head. And if you go off the cable completely, the whole place blows up. Now, do I have your promise of cooperation? I can move around all I please? Of course, Animal. I'm tired of hunting rats for you, and I'm sure not going to hunt rats for those two in there. Turl laughed, the soul of joviality. I can go into the cage? When I'm standing outside with my little remote control box watching, yes. I can ride around the country? As long as you wear this, said Turl. He pulled out of his pocket a button camera with its loose neckband and dropped it over Johnny's head. If it shuts off or gets beyond a 5-mile range, why, I just push the first switch. You're not a monster, you're a devil. But Turl saw clearly he had won. So you promise? Johnny dejectedly looked at the remote control box bulge in Turl's pocket. He looked at the two girls who were now gazing at him trustingly. I promise to do the project, said Johnny. It was as far as he could be stretched. But it was enough for Turl. He almost gaily tossed his tools into the back of the truck and drove off. Johnny walked over to the cage, careful not to touch the bars, and began a cautious low-key explanation of what was going on. He felt like a cheat as he did so. If ever he had seen treachery, it had been in Turl's eyes. Chapter 6 1 Leverage, leverage, Turl told himself as he went through company papers in his office. He must solve this riddle of Numph. With enough on the planetary director, Turl could begin his own project in earnest. Wealth and power on home planet beckoned from the future. Only Numph could drop a mine bucket on him. And Turl was determined that once his project was completed, he was not going to spend 10 more years on this cursed planet. With enough on Numph, all he had to do was finish the project, obliterate all evidence, including vaporizing the animals, get his employment terminated, and there he'd be, wallowing in luxury at home. But Numph was getting a little restive. In the last interview, a couple of days ago, Numph had complained of the noise of the recon drone in its daily pass-by, and veiling it as a sort of compliment, he noted that the mutiny was not showing up on his lines. There was something on Numpf. Turl was fervidly certain of it. He was thumbing through a company publication, Metal Markets of the Galaxies, which was issued several times a year. It was supposed to go to the sales department, but there was none on this planet, since it sent its ore directly to home planet and had no sales except to the home company. Yet the publication was sent routinely to all mine sites through the galaxies, and Turl had fished this latest copy out of the incoming dispatch box. So many credits for this metal and so many credits for another. Such and such credits for unsmelted ore of what percent? It was very dull, but Turl laboriously went through it, hopeful of some clue. From time to time, he watched his live screens, keeping check on the animal. The button camera around its neck was working well, and in the vicinity of the cage and nearby plateau, he had a broader view. It was a test to see whether the animal really was going to behave. The control box that monitored the cameras lay handy on Turl's littered desk. The animal so far had been very well behaved. Turl was struck by its orderly sense of priorities. It had somehow managed to turn the wounded horse over and get the packs off it. It had gotten some pitch from a tree and sealed the wound. It must have been effective, for the horse was now standing on shaky legs, a bit dazed, but munching at the tall grass. The animal had then staked out the other three horses, using a plaited type of rope that had come from the packs. One particular horse tried to follow the man-thing around, nudging with its nose. It struck Turl very odd that the man-thing talked to it, that the man-thing had also talked to the wounded horse. Very peculiar. Turl couldn't understand the language and listened intently to see whether the horses talked back. Maybe they did. Supersonic? They must say something, because the man-thing sometimes answered them. Was it a different tongue than the man-thing used to the two female creatures in the cage? Turl guessed there might be several such languages. Well, it was no matter and not important. He was no chinko, he decided, with contempt for the old race. Turl had next been distracted by the screen views of the animal when it mounted up on a horse and went down to the work area. From what he could see via the button camera the animal wore, the cyclo workmen ignored him after a brief glance. The machines went right on tearing around as always. The man-thing rode up to Kerr. Turl got very interested and turned up the volume. Kerr tried to edge away. The animal said something peculiar. It's not your fault. Kerr stopped backing up. He looked confused. I forgive you, said the animal. Kerr just stood there staring. Turl couldn't get a very good look at Kerr due to the shadows of the dome Kerr wore, but it seemed to Turl that Kerr looked relieved. Turl took careful note of that as a sort of trick. It was not the kind of behavior he had ever thought about. And then Turl really was startled. The animal borrowed a blade machine from Kerr, Char came over and objected, and Kerr waved him off. The animal tied the horse to trail after the machine and drove the vehicle back up to the plateau. Kerr had looked positively threatening at Char. Had the animal started a fight between the two cyclos? How had the animal managed that? Well, thought Turl, he was just imagining things, and the screen views had been jumpy and the sound very flawed due to the roar of machinery. And Turl went back to the real puzzle of Numpf. The next time Turl remembered to check, he saw that the animal had used the blade machine to knock down a half dozen trees and pile them up near the cage. It was using the blade controls to axe up the trees in lengths. Turl was pleased it could operate a machine like that. It would have need of such skill. Turl got involved with bauxite quotations through the galaxies and didn't pay any more attention until nearly nightfall. The animal had returned the blade machine and was now almost finished with a fence. It had built a fence of sorts all around the cage. Turl was puzzled until he remembered the animals saying the horses might touch the bars. Of course. It was protecting the females from flash in case the horses short-circuited the bars. After another hour of studying prices, Turl got his face mask and went down to the cage area. He found that the animal had built itself a little hut from the tree branches, and now had the instruction machine and table and packs in it, and was kindling a fire in front of it. Turl hadn't really recognized that man-things could create houses without dressed timber or stones. The man-thing got a branch burning and, with some other things in its hand, went over to the cage. It had left a zigzag opening before the door, to bar the horses and still let a man-thing through. Turl threw a switch and cut off the juice to the bars and let the animal in the cage. It handed the female the burning brand, put down some other things, came out again, and got some wood and took it in. It was very interesting to Turl. He noted idly that the females had cleaned up the old robes, dismantled the meat-drying rack, and neatened the place up. He checked their collars and leashes and the firmness of the pin to which they were tied. They shrank from him as if he were a disease. It amused him. After he had pushed the animal out and was locking the cage door, from nowhere an idea hit him. Turl hastily turned on the juice again and went tearing back to his office. Throwing down his face mask, Turl yanked a huge calculator into the center of the desk. Talons rattled on the key buttons. Reports to home office concerning ore tonnage shipped flashed on the screen and went into the calculator. Ripping through the sales price publication and battering its data into the machine, working with an intense fury, Turl calculated the home office values of earth ore shipped. He stared at the screen. He sat back, stunned. The operational cost of intergalactic on Earth and the current market value of the ore shipped told one incredible fact. Not only were Earth operations not losing money, but ore sold values were 500 times the operating cost. This planet was incredibly profitable. Economy wave? By the crap nebula, for this planet could afford to pay 5, 10, or 15 times the wages and bonuses. Yet, Numpf had cut them. It was quite one thing for the company to make an enormous profit, but it was quite another for Numpf to lie about it. Late into the night, Turl worked. He went over every report Numpf had sent to the home office in past months. They seemed very usual, very much in order. The pay columns, however, were a bit fishy. They listed the employee's name and grade and then said simply, "Usual pay for grade," in a symbol form. And under bonuses, they said, "As designated." Very funny sort of accounting. One could say, of course, that this mine area was not an administration center and was short of personnel, and that the home office should finish the reports. After all, the home office accounting section was not only well-staffed, but also totally automated. Here they just handed out the credits across a pay table to the employees. A lot of them couldn't write anyway, and there were no signed receipts. It was this omission that made it necessary to return bodies of workers killed. Then, about midnight, Turl found something funny about the vehicle reports. Vehicles in use for each 5-day work period were customarily reported by their serial numbers. The first oddity was that Numpf was reporting vehicles in use. Hardly a function for the planetary head, but Turl knew Numpf's writing. Suddenly, Turl found a vehicle he knew was not in use. It was one of 20 battle planes he had had returned from other mine sites. Those 20 sat outside in a nearby field, there being no room left in the garage. Yet, there it was. Battle plane 3-450-967G. Numpf had noted it in use for the past period. On report after report, Turl examined those in-use listings. He noticed that they varied in position from one to another. The sequence was different in every report. Turl smelled code. By dawning light, he had it. Using serial numbers of the countless vehicles on the planet, One could choose the last three digits and, by plain substitution of numbers for letters, write pretty much what one pleased. With expanding joy, he read the first message he had decoded. It said, "No complaints here. Bank difference as usual." Turl did another calculation. He was exuberant. These reports went to Knipe, Numpf's nephew in home office accounting. The total pay and bonuses of Earth should have been around 167 million galactic credits. Actually, no bonuses were being paid and only half the salary. It meant that Knipe on home planet was reporting full pay and bonuses and was banking to the personal account of himself and Numpf close to 100 million galactic credits a year. Their own combined pay would not exceed 75,000 credits. Their swindle was making them nearly 100 million a year. There was the evidence, the code, the incomplete accounts. Turl's office shook as he paced back and forth, hugging himself. Then he paused. How about making Numpf and Knipe cut him in? They would have to. But no. Good as he was as a security chief, Turl realized that if he could untangle the scheme, so could somebody else. It was big money, but dangerous money. Knipe and Numpf stood a fair chance of failure, and if caught, they would be vaporized out of hand. Turl wanted no part of that. So far, he was not culpable. He could not be blamed for not catching on, for it was not part of his department to do accounting. No complaints had come his way. He had written orders from Numpf to be alert for mutiny, but no orders from anyone to police home office. No, Turl would be content with his own 100 million, thank you. It was very smooth. He had it all worked out. It was not company ore. No company employees would be used. He could call it an experiment and even show he was ordered to do it. Nothing would go into company records. The last little part of it was risky, getting it to home planet, but he could even worm out of that if caught. And he wouldn't be caught. Let Numpf and Knipe have their fortune and their risk. He would preserve these records just long enough to convince Numpf if he needed to, and then he would destroy them. Oh, did he look forward to his next interview with Numpf.